Blog Talk Radio.
Something happened to me last Thursday when I was driving home. I had a couple of miles to go. I looked up and saw a glowing orange object in the sky to the east. It was moving very irregularly. Suddenly, there was intense light all around me. When I came to,
Strange Secret Universe. I have a great guest tonight. Show favorite, Robert Morningstar. Without further ado, let's please bring him on. Hey, Robert.
Hi.
How's it going, buddy? I'm glad you could come on tonight. As usual, I always love bringing you on. You're always pumping out the best information and getting down to the finest detail, and I want to thank you for that.
Thank you. Well, thank you for helping me get the information out. It's a pleasure to be back, and I see a lot of activity on your page, and good shout-outs to all the friends who have been watching the Facebook interaction. And tonight's subject, as I said, is the secret space program in World War III. And again, speaking on behalf of President Kennedy, and his good advice to all Americans, we should never engage in a war, especially a nuclear war, in which the fruits of victory would be but ashes in the victor's mouth. And I think that the powers that be seem to be itching with itchy trigger fingers, trying to get us involved, embroiled in another, a worse war than anyone has ever imagined, starting to suggest the possibility of the use of tactical nuclear weapons. And I think that I have to stay on the subject and advise everyone that we must all turn our minds away from the possibilities of engaging in nuclear war, even on a limited scale. It's just abhorrent to human nature. And I'm afraid that I see the world powers being drawn toward this by the people who rule the planet, the people who control the financial sector of the world, the globalists. They seem to want to depopulate part of the world and at the same time use a war to enforce a new system upon us all, a new financial, new economic system, but a new social order. And I think it's left to us Americans to fight for our freedoms and to preserve our liberty and not to conform and not to go along with the globalist UN global government agenda. So the subject is a secret space program, and perhaps studying the reasons for war. It seems America got involved in a concept of perpetual warfare in order to drive a war economy during peacetime. The theory is called guns and butter. In the old days, in the old wars, when a nation went to war, the whole nation suffered privation, deprivation, rationing. For example, World War II, rationing of foods and rationing of resources. And in the Vietnam era, they pulled off a war where they could have American people, the American public, enjoy, as you might say, guns and butter. We didn't suffer deprivation of food resources or allocation of resources. The only thing that I can remember that was similar to what World War II was like was the gas rationing period in the 70s when OPEC raised the price of oil and it skyrocketed and there was a shortage. And for a brief period of time, a couple of weeks or a couple of months, we had to line up at the fuel pump. And on certain days, people with even numbered license plates could gas up, and on the alternate day, the people with the odd numbered license plates were allowed to gas up because of the shortage. That's the only thing that I can recall in my lifetime that's analogous or even similar to what happened in World War II. So when they got into this idea of driving economy, of boosting economic growth by engaging in war, they got into a formula, and they can't seem to break out of it. By this I mean that in order for the military-industrial complex to keep appropriations coming for weaponization, there has to be a recycling of the old weapons that you've already got. And there also has to be a need for new weaponry to be requisitioned and funded. So one of the things that people don't realize about Vietnam was half the war was to try to get appropriations and get the economy going on a war economy by spurring the military-industrial complex. But in order to do that, there also had to be a need for new weaponry. And this is precisely what they had in mind in the beginning of the Vietnam War. They lost a lot of old equipment. They wanted to use and deploy and get rid of all the old Korean War equipment and in order to requisition and develop, you know, R&D, the next generation of weapons. And I'm afraid that the secret space program is part of this new military-industrial complex idea, and that this war that they're trying to stage, which is already going on. World War III has been ongoing even before 9/11. It's just that America has been too dumb to realize it and doesn't want to declare it or acknowledge it. But the whole rest of the world really sees clearly that there are several nations and power groups on this planet that are at war with the United States and with the American people. And some of it has infiltrated our own government and is working against our own best interests. And part of that is the divide and conquer theory to keep us all separated and factionalized, primarily by hyphenization. Every time you hyphenize your national identity, every time you cite your ethnic identity before your Americanness, you're factionalizing yourself, and you are being also grouped together. So I like to say that I am an unhyphenated American, and that I think we have to start thinking along those terms. And I was really thrilled to see and hear Governor Bobby Jindal when he went to England and started really pointing out, you know, the true situation in England with the incursions of Sharia law into certain areas of cities, exclusionary zones where Muslims are setting up their own enclaves, ruling and running them as if they were in their former countries. And so Bobby Jindal was pointing this out, and that this isolation and factionalization of ethnic groups is part of the divisiveness or divisiveness in society today. And he quoted me. He started saying that we have to start thinking of ourselves as unhyphenated Americans. So on that unity note, I think the one thing we have to all be unified in is, you know, just dedicate ourselves not to consent, not to agree or to conform or to comply with any directives that would lead us to self-destruction and engaging in nuclear warfare. Now, what I see is that the need for this deployment, the secret space program, is quite literally the weaponization of space and the maintenance of secret programs, UFO programs, that each nation has. And in order for this to be used, to be deployed, they have to have a theater. And, you know, they talk about military theaters, and so I think that this theater, global theater, is staging these unnecessary wars, and in part to fulfill certain prophecies that we are all familiar with from the various religious texts, each one dealing with the end of the world or the return of the Messiah or the return of the Mahdi for the Muslims, Armageddon, the war between Gog and Magog. And I feel that that's what's being staged right now. Do you have any questions you want to ask?
Oh, man, I'm just sponging this all up, man. It's heavy
stuff. Know, I think I have a skill. I have insight into what's being programmed. You know, I look at television.
Oh,
and
yeah, condition.
That's what they're presenting. It's why are they presenting certain images to our minds? It's all about persuasion. And there are a lot of ways of persuading people, and some are more subtle than others. Some forms of persuasion include reasoning and logic and science. And then there's another kind of persuasion, which is kind of emotional persuasion. It's what I call emotional blackmail very often, depending on how it's being used. And I find that a station like CNN likes to manipulate emotions much more than the other news stations, and to kind of like tug at your heartstrings with a kind of formula way of dealing with tragedy or crisis or disaster. And some of it is very distasteful to me, like running up to a person who's in utter grief, that loss, and sticking a microphone and a camera in their faces and getting all their whimpering and their whining and their sadness. And, you know, and the way I came to this, you know, a lot of times, so people get glued to the TV set and just look at it all the time. I work, I go away, I'll leave it in the background, and then what I'll be doing is listening and feeling the news, you know? And that's the real distinction that I find, you know, when I'm listening to news. If I'm listening to CNN after a crash, for example, this disaster of the airline crash or any of the others, and you hear all this moaning and crying in the background, and the whole gloomy atmosphere of the event is brought into your living room, whereas other stations will, you know, be more detached. They'll show you the wreckage and talk about statistics and background and stuff and scientific data. But I find that a lot of it, especially CNN and the left-leaning stations, really go overboard, you know, with the tearjerker type of coverage.
Yeah, for sure.
Really sad, morose, pathetic, that's the word, you know, truly pathetic displays that are meant to persuade you or move you emotionally. Rather than intellectual.
Yeah, another prime example, Robert, excuse me, is here in the Chicago Tribune. It's always, I mean, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of crime and a lot of violence going on in the city, but everything you see is just morbid, and it tries to, I believe it's to induce fear, as you know, and control, among other things.
Well, of course, all of it is intended to keep us all in a heightened state of stress, distress, anxiety, or outright fear, you know? And that's why we have to step aside and divorce ourselves from that. I recommend to people when you have, you know, a serious critical situation, our human nature has put fear in our body of emotions to help us recognize life-threatening events, but it's not something that we have to live in and sustain ourselves in. Fear is a signal from the mind or the soul that there is danger about, but the instant you recognize it, you must divorce it and act, right? So you register the fear, and then you have to act out of fear. Right, and that's what I say. You have to just acknowledge that you had it, the reason why you had it, and then correct it. So I want to point out to people not to live in fear. To think is to create. Imagination becomes reality. So if we're dwelling on all of these negative outcomes, all of us, doom and gloom outcomes, then we're creating space for that to manifest. And that's why I don't like science fiction movies about dystopia, you know? That grungy, mechanical, technocratic future. And it's only by our compliance that we allow those things to happen. We have to step
out. Are you talking about like Demolition Man, futuristic?
Did you say Demolition Man? I just saw that by chance, which I had avoided the movie because it's a typical, machine gun fire and broken glass and the car chase movie, those formula Hollywood movies. But I have to admit there were some funny parts in there about that kind of the helmet for having sex.
Or the shells for the toilet paper, jingles.
It was very
all the future radio was jingles.
It was actually, you know, foreseeing a lot of the things that are happening in our present time. Yeah, that's what I mean. But also, I'm glad you brought up movies. Movies seem to be part of the mind control apparatus that prepares the public for upcoming events and years ahead of time. This is what was meant by Marshall McLuhan when he said the medium is the massage, which has been transformed into medium is the message. The message is what's coming out of the screen overtly, you know, the blab, but the images that are being shown, and as I said before, the emotional blackmail that's being conducted or emotional manipulation that is being conducted, that's the massage. The medium is the massage, and it massages your mind and your subconscious to be receptive to the implantation of ideas and suggestions. And I have found in reviewing a lot of movies from the 1990s and early 2000s that the movies were preparing the way in our minds for things like genetic engineering, transhumanism, mind control, RFID chips. Just by chance, I saw that NBC put out a report that they foresee implantable chips being used widely by 2017, and pointing out the House bill in there moving its way through the Congress, proposing that we all receive our RFID chips, like the very chip. And that's part, you know, I think I was on your show a year or more ago talking about the Obamacare clause that I found five years ago. I read the Obamacare bill and I came across the clause that called for the implantable chip, except it was disguised and hidden in there with a cross reference. It was hidden in there with a cross reference for the medical registry devices, cross-reference to the Food, Drug, Cosmetic Act of 1996, Section 519G. But that's all it mentioned, you know? And in order to understand it, you really had to go and get that other document, the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act of 1996, and go through hundreds of pages and find Section 519G. And it's in Section 519G that you find that the government has been funding the development of the RFID chip with a company called Verichip. And all of these experiments that were being done with tracking the pets, you know, they always hook you with a very sympathetic idea. Oh, never lose your pet. And the next one was never lose your child. Remember? And then the health care bill called for that. Always keeping track
of what happened to the dogs. It was the dogs first, and then it was the kids.
The tumors.
To keep track of the kids. Don't let your kids get mad. Don't let your kid, you know, please put a chip in them so you know where they're at all times. Yeah, I remember that agenda being pushed.
Yeah. Well, anyway, these are all forewarnings, and the only reason any of that will work is your compliance. The only reason that the military-industrial system works is because of your compliance and your idea that it's inevitable and that you can't do anything about it. Well, that's a mistake. You can do a lot about it, and people are learning that through the internet, you've been given a great power. Each of you who is listening on a computer, has an email. You have a tremendous amount of power and influence, and you just have to take it up and utilize it. Now, the Secret Space Program, I'd like to point people to the Secret Space Program site on Facebook, where they can get the real history, the real background facts about how this system developed. And at the Secret Space Program Facebook site, you'll be able to listen to all of the lectures that were given in San Francisco, San Mateo, California, to be specific, last June, where a distinguished group of speakers presented the facts surrounding the origins and the development of the Secret Space Program. And outstanding people like Richard Dolan, who wrote UFOs, National Security State.
My God.
Mark Anlish is an engineer who worked in the aerospace industry for many years and had direct experiences of seeing UFO, both real UFOs and reverse engineers. Well, they're both real UFOs, but reverse engineered UFOs as opposed to alien ET craft. And Catherine Austin Fitz exposed how $40 trillion of America's resources has been siphoned off and into offshore corporations with no accountability and apparently directed toward this secret space program development and the weaponization of space. And Dr. Carol Rosen spoke against the weaponization of space. She worked directly with Wernher von Braun, who warned her back in the 1970s about the plan, the globalist plan, to keep the world and America in particular in a constant state of war. And this is one of the secrets of executive powers. Executive powers are emergency powers that were given to the president through the War Powers Act. Roosevelt, specifically World War II. So when World War II ended, all of those powers should have ended, you see? But in order to keep those powers and extend them, they had to create new wars to keep our country in a constant state of war. So there was the Cold War, which worked very well for decades and decades. Then that came, that wound down, it wasn't enough. And so in the Nixon era, and first of all, in the Johnson era, they had a war on poverty. That's a war. And then they had a war on drugs. And then we had a war on terrorists. And then the war with against cosmic threats, dangers, asteroids, and ultimately the war against extraterrestrials. And that's the sequence that was given. The latter sequence was given by Dr. Wernher von Braun to Carol Rosen, forewarning her that in coming years, in the 90s and, you know, the next century, the wars would continue, but the threats would be terrorism, asteroid, meteor showers, and extraterrestrials in order to keep this machinery going. So in order for this new machinery to come online, they have to get rid of all the old machinery. And that's what you're seeing happening in the Middle East, you know, with the abandonment of our equipment, turning over equipment, leaving it so that ISIS and those terrorist organizations can just jump on it. And then if we allow this overt World War III scenario to unfold, that's when they'll pull out the stops and bring out all the gadgetry, which I thought, already, if you look back at the Ukraine incidents, the Ukrainian revolution, as they're calling it, we saw a huge UFO overfly the area way back, I think it was last May of 2014, a giant cigar-shaped UFO that they call the super UFO supercarrier made its way over the Ukraine, and it wasn't speeding. It was really slow and low and deliberate so that everyone could see it. And I believe that that's one of the psychological weapons that are being used. And it seems to me that the nations, the warring nations, are playing a game of chicken with the Soviet Union, with each other. And it's very dangerous, playing chicken. For those who don't know what playing chicken was in the 1950s, I grew up in Hell's Kitchen in New York, and there were gangs, and rival gangs, and a lot of machismo. And playing chicken was taking a knife and throwing it at the ground as close as you could come to somebody's foot until they moved their foot. And if they moved their foot, they were chicken. And sometimes guys who were so brave, they didn't move their foot. So sometimes it's better. You're going to have your foot is intact if you play it right. But anyway, it's kind of brinksmanship is another term for it. You know, pushing the opponent to the point where he either acts and attacks or he backs down and loses face. Right, and that's something that we should have gotten over after the Cuban Missile Crisis, because that really came close to being an all-out nuclear war, and only thank God President John F. Kennedy and his brother Robert Kennedy forestalled that. They stood up against the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the Pentagon, National Security Council, and they ordered them to stop and back off. They wanted to start a first strike nuclear war against Russia. And then the other thing they wanted to do was invade Cuba, not knowing that Khrushchev, Premier Khrushchev of the Soviet Union, had already delegated the authority to employ tactical nuclear weapons to his field commanders. So had the 7th Fleet invaded Cuba and the Marines been riding onto the beach, you know, in the landing craft, the moment that the Soviet commander saw those landing craft streaming from the destroyer and the aircraft carriers and the troop ships that were carrying them, he was going to launch nuclear-tipped Luna missiles on the U.S. 7th Fleet, and everyone would have been fried. But thank God it was President Kennedy in the White House and not Richard Nixon. Those 10 days in October of 1962. But it was the secret space program was already well in gear. I would say the secret space program actually started immediately at the end of the 1940s with the Skyhook balloons and the high-altitude jumps by Joe Kittinger, the development of the idea of aerospace. But in the 1950s, we already had what's called the Corona satellite. That was our top secret spy satellite that was overflying the Soviet Union, taking photographs of specific military bases and industrial regions. And then as it flew over the United States, it would drop the capsule, which would plunge through the atmosphere. And then when it got into the lower atmosphere, would deploy as with a parachute that would be captured by a fast aircraft that would hook it and then send the material down to Texas, of all places, to be developed. And this is how we got to see Soviet missile bases, and we got to count how many bombers they had on their runways. Then the secret space program really kicked into high gear in the 70s and 80s with the reverse engineering of captured alien spacecraft, some of which we're seeing flying around the United States and the world today.
You mean the triangular, the triangular shaped crafts and
black triangle is one version, but the one that I'm thinking of right now is the white pearl or spherical UFO. It's just a white ball.
Yeah.
Usually two flying lead and wingman. And I've had those fly by me in New York City several times already. and really low altitude, over the treetops near the Hudson River, while one waited over the Hudson River at perfectly standing still in the middle, above the middle of the river at about 1,100 feet, while another one came down to this area where I teach Tai Chi in Riverside Park, a spectacular monument, Civil War monument, on one of the highest areas of the West Side, so you can see the river and New Jersey and a lot of big sky. So they've flown by many times already, I would say at least 5 times in my experience, right from that vantage point. But the white sphere UFOs, I've encountered them while flying, and I've encountered them, the egg-shaped ones are the ones I've encountered flying. The spherical-shaped ones are the ones that I've seen conducting operations over New Jersey in a hive-like manner, and the other ones being the low-flying scout ships that, to be honest with you, when they've come down really close, it has seemed to me like they were just sightseeing. They weren't buzzing by. It was like really flying 25 to 30 miles an hour and taking in the scenery, as you might say. So, yeah. And I feel they are protecting New York City, to be quite frank with you. I think they are guardians. Now, the white sphere UFOs, I'm very excited about them because I found actual proof that we have them. There's a YouTube channel called Dark Sky Watcher 74, DSW 74 is his handle. He's got a channel, and he has remarkable moon telescopy. He's got a regular telescopic observatory that regularly transmits live feeds of his tracking the moon, and he's captured several UFOs flying across the face of the moon. But he also releases leaked information, and last year he leaked a YouTube video that's called Area 51 UFOs, Secret Area 51 UFOs Smuggled Out of Area 51, and it's a flight test of three UFOs are in the air buzzing around the course, and it's Area 51. And as I watched it, I was like, whoa, I'm amazed, you know, to see like a dog race, you know, how they race across around the track chasing a rabbit. Well, this was a section of a tape of a flight test, February 7th, 1989. It said anti-gravity propulsion system test. And I start looking at it. Is this authentic? So, well, that's, you know, first you see the UFOs, then you're intrigued, and then you've got to say, well, is this real? So I start looking at the background, and I'm saying, you know, hey, this really does look familiar. Look at those runways. Look at that angle. Look at those towers. So as it was, and I viewed the tape about 10 times, and then I started to see the landmarks. The water tower with the orange and white checker paint pattern, satellite dishes mounted in front of buildings that seemed to rotate, satellite dishes that had tetrahedral probes, and the other one had a pyramidal-shaped probe. And so I said, well, you know, it looks pretty authentic. I know Area 51 from space, and I know it's got some very strange runways, including extremely long runways, extremely wide taxiways, big enough to handle the space shuttle tractor, for example. So I start to see those landmarks, and I start to see the hangars. And so I said, well, let me just see. So I went to a site called the Lazy G Ranch, and these people have been tracking Area 51 for years, and what they've done is they've flown in aircraft to very high altitudes with extremely powerful telescopic cameras, and they got really good pictures of the Area 51 runways and surrounding architecture. And there were all the pictures that I need to prove that the video is authentic. The checkered, the water tower with the white and orange checker pattern, the satellite dishes, the huge hangars, the strange runways with the oblique angles, the double track, taxiway capable of handling the space shuttle tractors and so on. And then I was talking about it, I shared it with some friends, and my friend Scott said to me, "Hey, how big do you think those things are?" He says, "I think they're kind of small." And I said, "No, I think they're at least the size of a Humvee truck, you know?" He goes, "Well..." So it intrigued me. The question intrigued me, actually. So I said to myself, let me go back and let me see if I can find ground references, stop the frames, look at the UFOs and compare it to any truck in a parking lot or a car on a taxiway or a person by a door or even a door. So I go through the film again, and I'm clicking stop, pause, start, stop, start, stop. And all of a sudden it's going by this hangar, and I look. And on the ground were eight more craft, exactly like the three that were in the air. Now,
Oh, yes,
I found the first hangar. Now, people could argue that somebody could hoax a video of UFOs, but who would hoax a video of three UFOs flying a course around Area 51 and then think and say, oh, you know what, I'm going to be so smart, I'm going to put eight more of them on the ground. Do you know what I mean? It's beyond...
Oh, yeah.
So what it was this. I found the area in Area 51 where these white sphere UFOs were all hangared and all collected on one day, February 7th, 1989, when each group had to do their flight test. So there were, each time, three would go up, one would be the lead, two would be the trainees or the other pilots that were qualifying or testing the vehicle, and they were going up two by two. And I found two or three in the air, lead and two wingmen, doing their course and their maneuvers, with eight of them on the ground waiting to get their turn at turning the course. So that became the basis of a talk and an article that I'm working on, which says the USA has UFOs. And that tape proves it. So, folks, they spent a lot of money on these things, and I think that the powers that be have been using them to spy, to strike, you know, in secret operations, and to journey to the moon, and they visit the space station regularly. If you go to a NASA live feed of the space station, you'll occasionally see them flying under and with the space station as it makes its course around the world. Now, to get back to World War III and the orchestration in this global theater of World War III in terms that will fulfill prophecy, the one that's really staring me in the face right now is their desire to fulfill the prophecy of the war between Gog and Magog, which is a very strange country, you know, the name Gog and Magog. And I didn't understand it until I spoke to a friend of mine who, he happens to be Muslim and he studied Hebrew at Yeshiva University, and he explained to me what Gog Magog means. And he said that the word Gog refers to a country or a concept or a culture, and that the prefix ma in Hebrew means of. So Magog means of Gog. So the Gog of Gog are going to go at war with each other. He described it as a country that was a piece of another country, but not exactly like it, was part of it, but separate from it. And then when he was describing this to me was, I guess, April of last year, 2014, just when all this stuff was happening in the Ukraine, and it suddenly hit me that Gog is supposed to be this region, this country, which encompasses part of Russia and the Caucasus. And then Magog, Ukraine, fits that title. You know, Ukraine and Russia were part of each other for hundreds of years. As a matter of fact, the Tsars, the last Tsars, who were wiped out in the Communist Revolution, they were Cossacks. Their family originally came from Kiev in the Ukraine. So this war of Gog and Magog could be Russia and Ukraine. And it could be that these manipulators who want to use the Holy Scripture to convince us that it's inevitable, that prophecy has to be fulfilled, and that there's nothing we can do about it, are using this to stage World War III, and we mustn't fall for it. It's also very interesting to see this complete turnaround in American policy vis-a-vis Iran and Israel, which is another part of the prophecy, if you understand what I mean. To the prediction, you know, to the prediction of the final battle happening in Megiddo, which is in Israel. So this development, you know, the culturing, the funding of ISIS. Who made ISIS? We made ISIS. Why was Christopher Stevens, why was he murdered? What was he doing in Benghazi? What was on the ship that was in Benghazi ready to go to Turkey? What was the operation that was going on down there? The operation was that we were buying back arms from the Libyans that we had armed and funded to overthrow Gaddafi. And then we were buying the arms back from the Libyans after Gaddafi was deposed, and they were put on a ship and sent to Turkey, where they were offloaded and shipped into Syria and given to ISIS. And that's why Hillary Clinton has deleted all her emails. They were hiding the fact that Ambassador Stevens was in Benghazi negotiating with the Turkish ambassador, had dinner with him that night, signed off on the ship and the shipment, and as soon as the Turkish ambassador left, the attack began, and they have to cover all of that up. And they if you had those emails, I'm sure the trail would lead, the trail to ISIS and the development of ISIS would lead directly to those arms shipments and the funding to try to depose Assad. So I am talking about quite a lot of wars going on right now. So, folks, yeah. World War III has been going on for at least a decade. And in this era of mass mind control and government deception and the era of guns and butter, we have continued to fight these wars. We've been fighting World War III for a very long time and not acknowledging that that is what we have been fighting. I was watching Captain Phillips, you know, the movie about the, the Maersk Alabama. What was that all about? I said, people are at war with us and we don't really want to acknowledge that it's a war. Those pirates took over the Maersk Alabama. They are at war with the United States. The USS Cole, that was an act of war against the United States. The blowing up of the Marine barracks in Lebanon, war against the United States. You just have to wake up. And now I'm worried. Concerns are the open borders in the South and the infusion of tremendous Chinese resources into South Central America and Mexico. And with a porous border like that, we're just waiting, watching the infiltration occur. So let's get
started. That's powerful stuff, man. You know, hey, I gotta get a longer show because when I have people like you on, I mean, we could go for 2 or 3 hours, and then I hate really to cut short because, man, I'm learning so much from you, and you're just such a mentor to me, man. And I'm grateful that there's great people like you in this world, Robert, and I appreciate you coming on.
I'm happy to have everyone like who gets the word out and is interested in hearing and getting a reality check, because that's really all I do. I see with 2020 vision. I like to say I have 20/20 vision and a 20/20 tongue. You know, when it comes to say, I say what I, and you know, God gave me a gift, have an insight, and training.